Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Jonathan Reif, 28 years of volunteer and career experience, firefighter first class on Engine 35 for Annapolis Fire Department. He is a past lieutenant with Washington, D.C. and past chief of the Huntingtown Volunteer Fire Department, adjunct instructor with the University of Maryland Fire and Rescue Institute. Jonathan has written several articles that have been published in Fire Engineering and Firehouse Magazine. Author of Thomas Sweat, Inside the Mind of D.C.'s Most Notorious Arsonist. Jonathan is a firefighter that wants to do the best at his job and isn't afraid to show it. We play like we train, and the individuals we keep around us is how we will act. From small to big city metropolitan organizations, Jonathan is constantly learning something new every day, regardless of rank or tenure. I truly hope the listeners can pick up the gem and nuggets being dropped in this interview. With that, I present Mr. Jonathan Reif.
So my name is Jonathan Reif. I've been involved in the fire service since 1996, at the age of 16 years old. And it all started with me joining the Huntingtown Volunteer Fire Department, which is in Southern Maryland, Calvert County, Maryland. My mother's second husband, who was my stepfather at the time, had been a volunteer firefighter for a large majority of his life. He volunteered in Virginia. And then when we moved to Calvert County, when I was 10 years old, he joined Huntingtown. And I would go up to the firehouse with him from the age of 10 until I actually joined when I was 16 years old. I joined a month before I was 16. I was able to slide through the cracks. I think they did me a favor. My home life wasn't the best, so I needed an outlet. And the firehouse is what gave me that outlet, gave me a place to go.
Okay. All right. So you mentioned your stepdad was in the fire service, which is pretty much what got you into it.
Yes.
Okay. When did you know or figure out, hey, like, I could do this like full time for a career?
So, you know, going up there as a kid, it was just the adrenaline, the thrill, you know, I don't know. It was something new to me. And that always sparked an interest in me. And so when I joined when I was 16, you know, I was young, I was still in high school. I was on a really, really bad path. I probably was going to end up in jail or, I don't know, drugs, dead. So I moved into the firehouse while I was still in high school. I had to get out of my house and didn't look like I was going to graduate high school. But I wanted to be a paid firefighter, career fire. I just didn't think I was going to be able to do it. I was working on a farm at the time, making $5 an hour. I wasn't able to get my driver's license because I had gotten in trouble so many times. And there was a guy at the firehouse. He was the chief then. He was the chief for quite a long period of time. He kind of took me under his wing and mentored me and was my role model. And it was a long process, but he said, you know, you can graduate high school. You can do this. You're a lot smarter than you think. I liked to just have fun and do the wrong things. I was able to graduate high school. Then when I got out of high school, it was like, now what do I do? And the same guy said, you're going to go to college. And I said, college, I barely graduated high school. But he said, you're going to be able to do it. And they have a program down here where they'll pay for your college if you meet certain criteria as a volunteer. So I did. I ended up getting to community college somehow or another. This is a long story, but I got my associate's degree, then went on to the University of Maryland, got my bachelor's degree, both in fire science. But I wanted to be a firefighter. I wanted to be a paid firefighter. The adrenaline rush, the thrill of it, the shift work, all of that stuff. Retirement money didn't mean nothing to me back then. You know, I was young. And it was hard. in the late 90s to get a job as a firefighter. Most places just they weren't hiring. But that was my goal.
Okay. All right. So I'm assuming when you figured out you wanted to be a career firefighter, did you apply at a certain department or did you apply at multiple departments?
Multiple would be an understatement. I applied everywhere, pretty much anywhere in the state of Maryland and Virginia. I applied. There weren't that many. So now in Calvert County, what keeps Calvert County volunteers running is paid firefighters. Paid firefighters on their days off. In the 90s, that there was paid firefighters. There was just a couple that volunteered in Calvert. It was farmers, people that worked 9 to 5. If we had a daytime fire, you didn't have many people that showed up. And there was a few guys at Huntingtown that were paid firefighters that worked for the federal government, NDW, Naval District Washington. And one of the guys was a captain there. And he said, "Have you considered applying for NDW?" And I had not applied there. And the reason I didn't apply is it was on a federal government installation. It just wasn't a thrill. Like it didn't seem, I wanted to go somewhere big. But he said, "I can pretty much, I can get you a job." Back then it was 24 on, 24 off. So I did apply with anything with the federal government. It was a long process. It took a year, year and a half for me to finally get hired, but that's how I got my foot in the door.
Okay. So that's where you started out at. Was it everything you thought it would be switching over to the career side?
Yes and no. It was definitely different working shift work, not like a volunteer fire department. What kind of What was probably a challenge and was not beneficial for me, but it was a great time, was I worked at a federal government installation in Calvert County, 5 miles from my house. And we never ran any calls on base. It was a very, very small base that maybe had 2 dozen people at the time. It's since disbanded. Our job was to protect that base. It was a naval research facility. It was like basically like a sub facility from the Naval Research in DC. And because we didn't run anything on base, all of our calls were mutual aid into the county with the volunteers, which was great because of where we sat at. I went to a lot of really good first due fires. But our chief worked in DC, so he was an hour away. The good thing was if we were doing things we weren't supposed to be doing, like wearing shorts and flip-flops, and we were right on the water, so we did a lot of fishing and crabbing. I would bring my boat to work, and we would crab while we were on duty, and if we got a run, we would just leave my boat in the water and jump on the wagon and leave. And if the chief was coming down to check in on us, our buddies in DC would call us and say, "Get your shit straight. The chief's on his way." We had an hour, so that's not normal. But the guys that I worked with there were they were just amazing guys. They were really good firefighters. I was young. I was a teenager. I thought I knew a lot. I didn't know shit. They taught me a lot. But yeah, that's how it all started.
So right there from the get-go, you stated, you pretty much surrounded yourself with good people, individuals that would teach you things that could, further your career and definitely go a long way within the fire service. How important would you say that is to any young probie or anybody that's looking to come into the fire service on finding the right type of people to surround yourself with?
I would just say to somebody that's younger, a probation, a probie, whoever that is still trying to learn things. When you get into the fire service, they do say you should keep your mouth shut, and I do believe that to a certain extent. You don't want to be that guy that's running his mouth constantly. Listen, just listen to people. If you just listen to the people that are around you talking, you're going to find out which people you want to cling to and which people you should try to avoid. Is it good to ask questions? Absolutely. If you're going to talk a lot, ask a lot of questions. You know, that's how you're going to learn. But if you just sit around long enough, you just watch people, you can clearly see who knows what they're doing and who is a bad example for our job. That's probably the best way you could do it. And ask other people, who would be a good person to talk to if that's somebody you're not currently working with.
Okay. All right. Well, with that being said, how long did you stay with the Naval Reserve Department before you decided that, and what made you decide, like, I want to try something or go to a department that's bigger?
So I loved working there. The shift work, like I said, it was 24 on, 24 off. But back then, especially in the summer times, we were getting held over a lot and we were working trades because, we didn't have a lot of time off, swapping shifts. So it was not uncommon to go to work for a 24-hour shift and not come home until 5 days later. I would literally work 5 24-hour days in a row. Come home for one day and then go right back. And I was watching the guys that I were working with. I mean, they weren't happy. They weren't happy. They weren't happy at work. They weren't happy at home. I was young. I saw that. I said, I don't want that, so I did. I was working my 24-hour shift on 9/11. And when I was working my 24-hour shift, I was actually not at the firehouse in Calvert County. I was at the Naval Research Lab in DC. I was getting turned over. I was going through training to drive the ARFF trucks. So I was working on 9/11. The station that I was working at was directly across the river from the Pentagon. A lot of things transpired after that. And I knew I wanted to get out of the federal government and go to another fire department with a better shift, a busier fire department. So I ended up doing that whole process and applying other places. And I had a lot of things happen at the same time, which I tell a lot of young people that get discouraged when they're trying to get their foot in the door. I said, you may have to apply to dozens of places, which I had to do. You're eventually going to get a phone call. And what's probably going to happen, just the way it works, you're probably going to get two or three phone calls, and then you're going to have to make a decision. So the first place I got a phone call from, it's actually funny. I got a phone call from Annapolis City Fire Department in the year 2003, which is right when I was getting ready to leave NDW. And Annapolis City Fire Department actually offered me a job. I met with the fire chief. Caveat was I was going to have to be, they were going to force me to become a paramedic.
Okay.
So I told the fire chief at the time, could I think about it? He said, yeah, but he had to have an answer by that day, the end of that day. So I left. And I knew that I was going through the process with two other places that looked also very promising. So I just called one of them. The first place that I knew I was probably going to get a job at was the U.S. Capitol Police Hazmat Team. It was a new organization as a result of 9/11 that was designed to just protect Congress in the event of a terrorist attack. It was brand new. They hadn't even hired anybody yet. I was also going through D.C.'s process, Montgomery County's process, and a couple others. And I was just making phone calls. The paramedic thing did not interest me. And when I called the recruitment person at the U.S. Capitol Police, she said, we were actually going to call you this afternoon and offer you the job. But since you called us, here's your job offer. So I took that job offer. The first group that they ever hired in that department was 15 people. I was one of the first 15. So then I had to call the chief of Annapolis back and say, I respectfully decline your offer. And that was 2003. So it was 21 years ago, which I now work in Annapolis. So a lot's happened since then. But I did. I went to work for the U.S. Capitol Police Hazmat Team. That was at the same time when somebody or some people were mailing anthrax constantly to Congress and the senators, which they never found out who that was. But that's when I was working there.
Okay. Now, how was that like? Because was it kind of a fire department or like police? Like, explain that if you don't mind.
Try explaining that to a 23-year-old. All of my friends are saying, you love the fire department. Now, I did have hazmat training. When I worked at for the federal government, We did a lot of hazmat training. We did a lot of hazmat stuff, which I'm assuming is probably why they hired me, because I did have a good resume. Did I like it? No, but I just it was something new. I never in a million years thought they were going to hire me. I'll be honest with you. I had to do a polygraph test, and I was not the best teenager growing up. And when I took the polygraph test, the guy that was administering it, and when I got hired, I was going to be a civilian, so I wasn't going to carry a gun, but I had to do the whole polygraph test. Guy that administered the polygraph to me, when we got done, I'm not going to tell you exactly what he said, but basically was, you're never going to work for this organization because of what you have told me, what you have done as a teenager and growing up. I remember walking out of there. To anybody that's never taken a polygraph, their job, which I didn't know at the time, is to just run you into the mud, make you feel terrible. I left there crying like a kid. I called my girlfriend up crying because I felt so bad about myself. But they hired me. The reason they hired me is because I was very honest. I didn't want to lie. But it's not a fire department, it's just hazmat. And as you know, with hazmat, anybody that does it, if there's no hazmat calls going on, there's really nothing to do. Can't sit still now when I'm 43 years old. I was 23 at the time. I did it. It was excellent money. Again, worked with some very, very good people, met some cool people. I mean, I worked, on the grounds of the Capitol. But again, I still left those other doors open. I was still going through the process of other places. And then, so I ended up working there for 1 year, and then DC Fire Department called me.
All right. Okay, so you did that for a year, transitioned to DC. Was the recruitment process and rookie school still the same like it is today?
In DC,
Yeah.
pretty much, I believe it's a little bit longer, but
Okay.
yes, it was a full academy. I think at the time, I think it was 15 or 16 weeks, I believe. Now it's longer, but yes, it was a full academy.
Okay. So you get done with the academy. What's your first assignment at DC?
My first assignment was Engine 3, which is first due to the Capitol. This is where I just worked at. This was not, it was not my choice. It's not where I wanted to go. I wanted to work in the hood, to be honest with you. I wanted to work where it was busy. Calvert County is a very rural department, or rural county, even though it's an hour south of DC. When I worked for the federal government, I was in a, a rural area. I wanted to go to a big city. Went to DC. I was not supposed to go to Engine 3, but the wagon driver at Engine 3, I was very good friends with. And just a few days before my graduation, he, and I didn't find this out till years later, he actually told one of the chiefs at the training academy that I wanted to go to Engine 3. He wanted me there with him, is basically what happened. So
Nice.
that's where I ended up. That's where I did my year of probation. I was Engine 3. Great.
Okay.
Great place. It was right in the middle of downtown DC, high rises, lots of fire alarms, all that stuff, but it was fine.
Okay. All right. So you do your year there, get off probation, and then I'm assuming you have room to go, hey, I want to put in for here. Where was your next spot?
So yeah, when I was getting off probation or coming close to it, I had a battalion chief that lived in Southern Maryland, very old school. I mean, this guy was the best. Roy Ridgway is his name. He was my battalion chief. Smoked Marlboro Reds constantly, very calm on the radio. Just, I mean, a really good guy. Been in the fire department for a long time. And the battalion chief always administers your very last test to get off probation. And he that morning when we were getting ready to do it, he said, "You don't want to stay here when you get off probation, do you?" And I said, "No, sir." He said, "Yeah, I've kind of figured that." He said, "Don't let this go to your head, but every single officer in the 2nd Battalion said they want you. So you can pretty much pick where you want to go." And I said, "Well, I know where I want to go. I want to go to 30 Engine." He said, "Done." I don't remember exactly how long it took. They were making some moves and transferring people because of me. It was just what they were doing. They needed to make room, and that's where I ended up, was 30 inch, and that's where I went to.
How was it because of your knowledge? Like, how did some of the officers in the 2nd Battalion come to know you? Because it's either two things in the fire service: either you're doing something well, or you're doing something not well that's making people go, "This guy."
I'm sure it's not because I wasn't doing anything well or doing anything bad. If I was doing anything bad, that would have never happened. I don't know what it was. I mean, so the firehouse that I worked at, Engine 3, was in the same battalion as 30 and all those. So, you know, I ran calls with those firefighters, those officers. And as a probationary member, one thing I did do was I literally kept my mouth shut. I was timid when I first became hired in DC. It's the nation's capital. It's huge. I'd never been in a place like that. Just trying to learn everything about the city. But one thing about DC is they are exceptionally well at ensuring everybody knows their history, the tradition, all that stuff. And it's so important that you never lose sight of that stuff. So I don't know. I never asked anybody, why did you want me to come to your firehouse? I'm assuming either they watched me on calls or they asked somebody about me. I don't know, but it definitely worked in my favor.
Right. Okay. I know it's still true today as it was back in the day with DC, but when you show up for shift change, 4:30, I think someone, when I went there last time, someone said if it's like five, a little bit past five, you're technically late.
Yeah, so 7 a.m. is technically the relief time. Yeah, the way you just said it is just right. If you come in after five, that's an issue. And those people are labeled. Now, if you're getting off from an overtime shift or, you know, that's okay. But yeah, 5 a.m. is you want to be walking in the door. And the other thing is, I'm an engine guy. I'm not a ladder guy. I'm not tall. I'm not built for that stuff. You don't want me on a ladder truck. I just don't enjoy it. So, and I'm the engine guy. So in DC, two firefighters in the back step. First firefighter that comes in is running the line. Next firefighter that comes in, he's running layout. So it also becomes a little competitive, especially if you have another firefighter that is competitive. And I will tell you, when I worked at 30 Engine, there was another firefighter there, a good friend of mine. I had known him years before DC, John Hope. He was also a guy that would come in really early. And it got to the point to where we were coming into work stupid early, 3:30 in the morning, because we wanted to get the line. We didn't want to ride layout. And that time just kept getting earlier and earlier and earlier. And finally, I don't know if it was him or if it was me, we were both like, this is dumb. Like, why don't we start coming in, 4:30, 5 o'clock, and just start rotating, every other shift or whatever it's going to be. Because it probably would have gotten to the point to where I was just going to come into work the night before and just sleep there just so I could get that spot. But it never happened. But that was at a time when we were going to, quite a bit of fires. And you wanted line. You wanted that spot.
Right. Okay. I love it. That's one thing I can say from definitely experience. I visited DC not too long ago, and I was able to ride with Engine 15, and just the traditions that you see in the fire service, the nostalgia, the pictures on the wall, how you guys operate. I mean, J-Bo was telling me, like, when a box comes in, like, there is, it's like, who's going to get there first? The camaraderie, the competition, that's what you want to see. And DC definitely holds true to that.
100%. I know a lot of departments don't agree with that sometimes. I'm a firm believer in it. I am. And I like to surround myself with people like that. Is everybody in DC like that? No. There are some people that, and it's nothing against them. I don't want this to come off the wrong way, but there are some people that get jobs as a firefighter because they see the shift work, they see the money, they see the retirement, and they are there. This sounds, everybody says this, but they are there just to collect a paycheck. It is just a job. It's just like a job where somebody goes to McDonald's. I'm not very old. I've only been in the fire department since 1996. I've seen a lot of changes. Some good, some bad. I like to be around people that like that. They like that competitiveness, that aggressiveness, that get in there first. Those are the people I want to be around. If you want to come to work and lay in bed all day long and come into work at the last minute, I'll be honest with you, I don't want any parts of you. And I think those people that do those things, they know it just by my attitude towards them. I don't have a lot to say to them. I don't want that stuff is contagious. I don't want to catch that disease. I don't want to be that person. The day that I become that person, hopefully never happens, is the day I need to retire. Honestly, it's the day I'm going to retire. The day that I'm not happy and coming to work at the last minute, it's the day I need to, put my papers in and go elsewhere.
I totally understand your sentiments 100%. And like you said, not everybody's going to like it. That's fine. But the one way of fixing that is you just don't need to hang around that person. You find another crew or another group of individuals that match the same mindset and skill set that you have. So I totally understand you 100%. 100%. So with Engine 30 being on there, being at the station you want, I'm sure Engine 30 is usually one of the busiest engines, top busiest engine in DC. When did you decide, like, okay, I'm ready for like to promote to the next level? Or as I always ask the guests, what internal breaker tripped where you're like, I'm ready and I want to do this?
So I knew that I was capable of promoting. Everybody I worked with told me I needed to promote. At the time, I don't remember what year it was, but I was also the chief of, I ended up becoming the chief of the Huntingtown Volunteer Firehouse, and I was young. But I knew that I was capable of it. I didn't want to promote. Basically, what everybody told me was just take the test so you see what it's like. That way, when you do promote one day, you know what to expect. At that time, I'll be honest with you, we were getting crushed on the ambulance at work. It's not nearly as bad now, but back then, we were on the ambulance all the time. It had gotten to the point when I was at 30 engine, where there were sometimes I'd ride the engine once a month, because we were getting detailed. It wasn't just me, but we were all getting detailed out all these different ambulances, and they were having guys from other battalions coming in, and riding our back step and driving our fire engine. So I did. I took the promotional exam. If I had a stayed riding the back step and knew that that was my spot, and I wasn't going to constantly get detailed out and all everything that was happening, I would have never taken the promotional exam. But I did it, and I ended up scoring extremely well. Then I had a decision to make. So,
Okay. So you get promoted. What's your next assignment?
I got promoted as a sergeant. And in DC, when you're promoted as a sergeant, you're either going to go, I mean, you could go to day work, but essentially, you're either going to be assigned to a ladder truck or battalion aide. Now, if you I've been doing special ops. Yeah, you're probably gonna be the sergeant of the squad, but I was just an engine man. But sergeants don't get assigned engines in DC. It's not an option. So I went to a ladder truck, went to truck 11.
And with you stating earlier, ladders aren't you. And I'm sure you're saying that with no offense to ladder guys, but how was that transition like? Because I'm sure that couldn't have been easy.
You know what? As much as I don't like ladder truck work, and I knew the writing was on the wall. I knew I was probably going to go to a ladder truck. I knew it. I just didn't know which one. And I knew that I probably was not, it was not going to be anywhere near 30 engine, which is 30 engine truck 17. So I actually kind of, what I was assuming was going to happen is exactly what happened. For anybody that knows DC, the furthest fire station from engine 30 is engine 22 and truck 11. It's a combined house. It's on the complete opposite end of the city. It's a great area. Truck 11 has the largest box alarm area than any other truck in the city. It was definitely different. You know, I was used to going to 30 plus calls a day on engine 30. Trucks aren't doing that. You know what I mean? They're not running all the medicals and the lift assists and all that. What was really, I wasn't looking forward to it because it was a ladder truck. It was on a completely opposite end of the city. Matter of fact, when I first went to truck 11, it was one of the few firehouses I had never worked at. I had to print off MapQuest directions. It's back when MapQuest was still a thing. I had no clue how to get there. I drove there to meet my shift, one or two shifts before I actually got assigned there. And I remember driving through DC reading directions off of a piece of paper because I had no clue where this firehouse was at. But the guys that I had on my shift loved truck work. They had been there for a while. They knew that ladder truck inside and out, but they knew the streets inside and out, and they made me enjoy it. Do you know what I mean? What they actually did was they made my job extremely easy. If they wanted me to come in to teach them truck work stuff, that was going to be a problem. We were not going to be a very good truck company. The reason that was a good truck company was it had nothing to do with me. I was just a spot. I talked on the radio. I gave size ups. Made sure they got paid. They made my job extremely easy. It was because of them. If I had a bad truck crew, I don't know how I would have made it better because I'm not that guy.
And that goes to back to that contagious being around those individuals. And you know, and I like that you say that because you know, some officers when they become officers, it's not like written that you have to know everything. It's okay if you don't, but it makes the job a whole lot easier when the people you surround yourself with are like, hey, it's cool, man. We're gonna teach you. This is how we do it. And they love when they love the job and love the truck work. Then you know, you tend to appreciate that and end up loving it too.
Yeah, you're 100% right. They made me want to come to work, and I and a lot of those guys, they were young. They were my age or younger, and they still had that thrill, that love for it. They loved that stuff. So and that's contagious. That again, that's like what you just said. That's what I want to be around. You could put me. I'll tell you. I never enjoyed getting my butt kicked on the ambulance, but. You put me on an ambulance with somebody like me, we're gonna have a lot of fun. We might also get fired or do something stupid, but we are gonna have a lot of fun. I had some extremely good times on the ambulance just because of who I worked with. And that's really what it's all about. It's who you surround yourself with.
No, absolutely. I mean, it could be the worst assignment, you know, such as being on the box. But yeah, if you're 100% right. If you have somebody that's there with you that's on the same page, man, I'm sure that shift goes by quick and it's fun.
Yeah, and like when I was at 30, there was firehouses, way up in Upper Northwest, Georgetown, and stuff like that. Back in the day, those were retirement homes. And there's a lot of other firehouses like that. They go on a couple calls a shift. Very rarely went to fires. And years ago, if there was a fire in those areas, it would be a small fire when they pulled up, and then it would just they didn't have the best people there. A lot of that's changed now. A lot of these guys have gone up there again, closer towards retirement, but they're good. I mean, they're good guys. They're good firefighters. They're good officers. They have convinced other people to come up there. They may not be busy, but it's a great firehouse. There's great people working there. And if they get a fire, it's going to go out. They got good people coming. And they're not, I like being busy, but they're what they tell me is, why go on 30 medicals a shift and miss two fires because we're stuck on these medicals? When we go to a firehouse up here, maybe only run five calls a shift, but we're having fun. They're not laying in bed all day long. They're having fun. They're training. They're learning their area. And if there's a fire, they're not going to be stuck on another call. I remember one time I worked up in Georgetown. I was working overtime on an engine. Every single person on that engine was working overtime, or they were working a trade from another battalion. None of us knew the area. None of us knew the area, and we had a box first due 1 o'clock in the morning, and we never made it to the scene. Never made it. We never made it because none of us knew where we were going. That was before cell phones had maps on them. DC, the guys that work in DC, there are no map books. There are no map books. You either know your area or you don't. Well, if you're working in an area that's not your area and you don't know it and nobody else does, you're just going to be driving around aimlessly. And that's what we did. We drove around for a long time until finally the box got put in service.
So you never made it to the box. Because
We never made it.
it's true though. It's true because talking to J-Bo and other guys like Kendall Wallace, Alex Pluto, when you go, it's not like you can, it's not like once you get off probation and you show up to a shift and they're like, hey man, you're driving today. It's before you do that, you have to know your short streets, long, like all that stuff. And it is truly map books, map sticks. Like it's one of those things I wish, just me personally, I wish other departments would do that because like that makes you truly have to know your area for sure.
You have to. And I know I said that I didn't really like working at Engine 3, but I will tell you one thing about Engine 3. I used to time it back then. You get five engine companies on a box. If all five of those engines that you're running with in that area, if they are all in quarters, if that when that box drops, you have maybe 2 minutes. Within the first 2 minutes, all five engines are there. So if you are 10 seconds too slow, if you get hung up in traffic, you literally could go from first due to fifth arriving. It was so fast paced. I can remember pulling up on fires and running down a sidewalk with the load on my shoulder. There's a firefighter next to me from another engine company trying to get ahead of me. He's got a shoulder load. There's another firefighter just feet behind me, running with his line. That's you want to learn stuff. That's where you do it at. I thought I had all these assumptions and things in my head that I felt about myself, but you really want to learn something, go work in a place like that if you don't know any better. You'll get a reality check.
You are 100% right because I it was amazing to see that. It was amazing to know that it's like an unspoken competition because J-Bo would say the same thing. Like we had a call and traffic was like I was like, man, how do you like navigate around that? And he was like, if a box came in and it's in this particular area, we have to go down this street. This is what we have to deal with. So because of this traffic, like you just said, it can make them going from first due to whatever place they arrive due to all that traffic. So that's why it's so imperative that they get out the door fast. Like it, I like it. I like that high speed tempo. I know not all chiefs and firefighters agree with that, but to me, that's what makes the fire service great.
Yeah, I mean, J-Bo, Boogie, whatever you want to call him, he started at Engine 3 also. We worked there together. He could probably tell you also, but there was a couple buildings that we always ran for smoke in the building. It was either food on the stove or it was a trash chute on fire. We ran a lot of trash chute fires. And Engine 6, I'm going to give these guys props and Shaw. Engine 6 is second due there. We're first due. The guys on Engine 6 on my shift back then, one was a guy named Craig Duck. Craig Duck, I don't even think is a human. It's unbelievable the endurance that he has. And he was one of my instructors in the academy. And then he had a couple guys on the back step. And I think both of them are on the squad now. I think all they did when they weren't sleeping, either on their days off also, was I think all they did was they worked out. They were tall. They were athletic and they were fast. And I don't go to the gym. I'm constantly moving. I don't go to the gym. I am not tall. So there was a couple of buildings that we always ran and we'd get there first. Then it was a race. And it's one of the reasons I wanted to get out of Engine 3. They embarrassed us all the time. It'd be on the eighth floor and we were taking racks. We didn't have a line long enough. It'd be on the eighth floor, and I would try everything. I would take the elevator to the seventh floor because I knew they had to run up. If I took that elevator, that meant they had to run up eight flights of stairs. We'd get off the elevator on the seventh floor to hook up on the floor below. They're already on the eighth floor on the radio saying that they had found out it was a pot of food. Then we'd run at the following shift, and I'd say, well, that elevator's too slow. They're quick on the steps. I'd take the steps. What would they do? They'd take the steps, and they would run past me like I was sitting still. It would piss me off. But that's the stuff that I love. You know what I mean?
No,
No,
absolutely.
absolutely.
100%, 100% get you. 100% get you. Sounds like they. Yeah, I'm sure you have stories for days
Oh, yeah.
on things like that. I want to fast forward a little bit. I'm pretty sure I read in your bio that you
You
promoted off
promoted
a
one off
truck
the truck
11
11.
and went to what engine?
Engine three.
You went back to engine three
Sure did.
as a
Lieutenant.
captain? No,
Lieutenant.
lieutenant. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. How was that like? What was your feeling?
Not happy. That was, I love the fire service. I think everybody in their life probably has a dark area from whatever. A call, a crew. That was my dark area. I went back to engine three, and I was not happy. The fire chief at the time, I'd have to go back, but when I was on probation, I had a run-in, and it was 100% accident. I had a run-in with a deputy chief when I was on probation. He walked into our firehouse in street clothes with the bay doors open. There was a lot of homeless people in the area. He walked in street clothes. I didn't know who he was. There's so many chiefs in DC. I knew he was not the fire chief. I knew he was not my battalion chief, but he was a deputy chief. And when he walked in, I was at the watch desk working on, I was studying, and I didn't call him sir. I didn't call him chief. I think I might have said something like, "Hey, what's up? You need a bathroom or something?" Well, he wrote my name down, and I was told that is not going to be good for you either soon or one day. Years later, I get promoted to lieutenant, and he's now the fire chief. So I went back to engine three. And he remembered me, and we had other run-ins since then. You know, you can work in DC your entire career, do a lot of good and a lot of bad probably, and never meet the fire chief, you know. And you go through several of them, but it's a big department. You may not even see your assistant chief. Well, I did have run-ins with this fire chief on numerous occasions. So yeah, it was not a good time. It's not where I wanted to be.
That's crazy though. I mean, how would you know? I mean, unfortunately, in this day and age, you have chief officers that do that. I don't know, what's it? Maybe it's because that they can and they're like, I have the power to do that. But yeah, that's definitely unfortunate. But it didn't last long, I'm sure. You're stint at three.
Yeah, he was very, very, very vindictive. He had a grind against a lot. It wasn't just me. He had issues with quite a few people, and those people that he had issues with, he made their life live in hell. He violated the union contracts and everything. And his answer was, because there was numerous lawsuits that were filed against him, numerous dozens. I wasn't one of them. I never filed a lawsuit. There was dozens of lawsuits filed against him, and his answer to that, and he was right. He was right. His answer to that was, by the time this goes to court, I'm already gonna be gone. There's gonna be another chief in here. So it was almost like you can ask other people. I think just about anybody would agree. It was almost like he became the fire chief with a goal of screwing with people, being vindictive, and honestly, I felt he wanted to destroy that department. Fortunately, he didn't get to that. You know, it's a big department. There's a lot of people that wouldn't allow that to happen. But his day did come. He was no longer the fire chief. So,
Okay. All right. Did you go anywhere else after that? After three?
no.
No. Okay. So is trying to figure out if I should. Yeah. So what made the switch to Annapolis? Because how long were you on DC then before you made that switch?
10 and a half years.
Am I able to ask why? Did you want to be closer home-ish? Nope.
No. So I was with DC for 10 and a half years, and that fire chief at 10 and a half years was still there. I knew he wasn't going to be there forever, but he was still there. I was in a bad spot, man. I was miserable. Miserable. I had some bad thoughts going through my head. In DC, you were vested at 10 years. So I was vested. I had a deferred comp plan since I had started in the federal government. I'd rolled it from there to the US Capitol Police to DC. I had a nice chunk of money. I was vested. It was there were some things that occurred in the middle, and me talking to my wife, but ultimately I resigned from the department. I say resign because I don't like to say retire, even though it is kind of a retirement, but I resigned. And when I resigned, I had such a bad taste in my mouth. I also resigned. I had a bad taste in my mouth, not just for DC, but for the fire service in general. That's how bad it had gotten. That's, again, it's a Reddit. People can do that to you. And I wish I had not have gotten like that, but it's who you surround yourself with. And he got into my head. So I resigned from there. The day I resigned from there, I also resigned from Huntingtown Volunteer Firehouse, where I had been the chief at. So ultimately, I was involved in the fire service none. So I went to work for the state of Maryland as a safety officer. Why? I don't know. I just wanted to try something new. I want to get out of the fire department. I ended up doing that for a year. And then I've been with Annapolis now for 8 years, eight and a half years ago, whatever the case may be. Annapolis was hiring lateral firefighters. Basically, they had come from other jurisdictions. I didn't even know that they were doing that. But one of my best friends was the deputy chief in Annapolis, and he called me up. He knew what had happened. He knew, I still talk to him all the time. He knew I wasn't happy with this new job with the state as a safety officer. And he said, "There's a there we're hiring laterals here. You should put in." And I went, "I'm good. My days in the fire department are done with." And he said, "No, I really think you should apply for this. Just think you should. It's a lateral process, you know." So I did. I applied for it. I really wasn't expecting a whole lot, but I did apply and I got hired. And it was, I honestly think that was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to me.
One thing you stated that I know I can attest to is, and I like to be 100% transparent. I don't want people to think like my life, my career in the fire service has always been like the highest of highs. Nope. I've definitely had some lows. I've definitely had some thoughts, some notions. And so with saying that, it is frustrating where when all you want to do is to be good at your job and you want others to kind of be good at your job when you have certain individuals, especially in the leadership position that you feel are like in your instance, he was clearly being vindictive. That definitely can kill your drive and make you, I 100%, I can see your whole reasoning of like, you know what, fuck it, I'm out. I want to be gone. I don't want to do this anymore. And you did. And so, like, I say that so others who might be in that situation or who have done that, like, it's okay. At the end of the day, you have to do what's right for you, for your mindset. You come first.
Yeah, and I want to say something. Firefighters are interesting people. The majority of us have type A personalities. I know I do. My wife can attest to that. And when that was going on with me in DC, all of these good guys that I've worked with throughout the years in DC that I've been talking about, they reached out to me, but I ignored them. I ignored them. I did not want anybody to try to help me. I almost felt like this was my bed. I'm going to lay in it. I'm going to fix it. I'm going to do something. They were offering to get me out of there. They were offering all of these things, and I did not take them up on the offer. Scott was extremely vindictive. And back then, this was also there was no peer support back then. There was nobody you could talk to friends, but there was, I almost just felt like, I was alone and like that. And for some reason, I would not take those phone calls. I would not talk to anybody about it. I'm on the peer support team in Annapolis now. And the reason I'm on that peer support team is I've been down those roads. I haven't told you everything. I had some very, very dark times, very dark times, that fortunately I was able to get out of and pull myself out of. But I don't want other people to go down those same roads. And I'll tell you something else. I've worked since then in Annapolis. You have really good officers. You have some officers that are mediocre. You have some that are poor. And it's not just that, this is everywhere. I've had people ask me, how can you work with that person? And I'll just say this for anybody that I work with, if they're listening to this. This is nobody that I currently work with. This is nobody in Annapolis that I used to work with on my shift. These were overtime. So when I was working overtime or trades, they would say, how can you work with that person or like them? And you know what I would always tell them? I have worked for the worst person, in my opinion, on the face of this earth. And that was that fire chief in DC. I don't care who I have to work for or is hired from now until the day I die, they'll never be as bad as that guy. I can promise you, it's not possible. That's how terrible that guy was. So anything after that is like a breath of fresh air. I don't care if you're an idiot, if you're mean, I just don't care. It can't be that bad. Not only that, I'm also 43 years old now. Back then I was much younger. I had a lot of lessons to learn. I have kids now. I'm married. Like, I'll never let anybody treat me like that ever again, ever. It will never happen. I'm not going to quit. They got something else coming for them. So.
Okay. I 100% can I agree with you. I'm with you. I'm on the same page for sure.
Nobody deserves to go through something like that. You know what I mean?
No.
Nobody.
And the fact that what I can't understand is how an individual chooses to accept that role, and it's like they are purposely trying to implode the department from within. Like, I mean, and the good thing now is it's 2024, and with social media and fire department cadre groups, and I mean, I guess you can kind of call them satire pages because that's how some of them go by, but like they are honestly doing what I feel like is good work by exposing these individuals, whether it's
100%.
fire chiefs, city council, local government, because that's the thing, like the fire service is one of those areas where I feel like we should never have any issues where communities, towns, jurisdictions are like, we're going to cut some services here. Like, there's no reason why police, fire, EMS, nothing should ever be cut in these areas because we can't rely on, oh, well, and it's true. It's testament. You know, the fire service never says no. Hey, Chief, we need your department to step up and do this, even though you only have three or two guys on a rig. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, we always say yes, but especially with like recent events with fire chiefs not visiting their own members that put everything on the line for them, and like all that's getting exposed. And some might not agree with me. Some might say, well, you know, that's leading to problem. To me, the problem that's leading to is exposing these individuals that should let people know this person's not a right fit for this organization and shouldn't be allowed here.
And not only that, I view all these pages. I love them. They're funny. A lot of them are, but they're exposing these people. And my thing about it is, most of these people that are in these positions of power, the taxpayers are paying their salary. We may or may not have voted them in there. You work for us. Those chiefs, politicians, however you want, they work for us. We are paying their salary. They need to remember that. You know what I mean? They need to remember that. And this stuff goes to their heads. I don't get it. They're doing it for the wrong reasons.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think a lot of it comes back to maybe some of them view it as No, you work for me. And so the way I look at it and the way I tell other people, I remember when I got hired at my department and it was like, you need to meet me. I, Danny, have to meet the expectations of said fire department. But at some point, growing up, maturing, it's like, is this department meeting my standards now?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You're right. Yeah. The crew that I work with today in Annapolis, dude, they're top notch. They're top notch. They do well in DC. They're top notch. I got a really good crew. I got a really good battalion. Our fire chief is amazing. I got a really good crew. Like I got a good battalion chief. We ass off a lot. We have fun in the firehouse, but on the streets, I mean, we're business. And the mentality and the attitude and the competitiveness, whatever you want to, dedication, however you want to word it, that way, the way that I was in DC as a 23-year-old, admired by all that, anybody that knows me will tell you I'm the exact same way in Annapolis. I still believe in that. And there may be some people that would say you're unsafe. Not talking about me, but just the way that we operate. Oh, that's unsafe or whatever. And maybe they don't say this, but I'm just speculating because we're pretty quick. My mindset is, and this is the way I view it now that I have wife and kids, if my house was on fire and my wife or my kids were inside, who do I want there? Who do I want there? Do I want you driving the exact speed limit coming here and hitting it hard from the yard? And I'm not saying anything about any of these new terms that are out there. I don't like the terms because a lot of the stuff we've already been doing, like transitional attacks, like I don't like the phrase, but have I done a transitional attack? Absolutely. If the front door's on fire and that's my only way to get in, and there's people inside, of course I got to do a transit. Like I get it, but who is coming to save my wife and my kids? Is it the guys that are just doing this for a paycheck, or are they doing it because they love the job? And this is a risky business. You know what I'm saying? Like those are the guys that I want that are going to do everything and put everything on the line to get inside of the house. So when I'm at work, that's the exact same way I operate. When I was a firefighter, I was like that. When I drive that wagon every shift, I'm like that. We're quick. I know we're quick at work. Ask the departments that surround us. Ask the stations. They not too long ago, somebody said that they think that we sleep on the wagon at nighttime. I like it.
Okay. All right. And I always like to ask this question because I don't always know everything, and I'm sure the listeners have some, questions on it. Can you describe Annapolis? Like how many stations, amount of personnel, things of that nature?
Yeah, so Annapolis is small, and that's a good thing. And I'll tell you why it's a good thing. You know everybody. Like when I was in DC, we had a couple thousand people. You worked overtime or a trade in another battalion. You may be working with an entire battalion of guys you've never met in your entire life. Annapolis, we work 24/72, so it's the same as DC, PG, a lot of the departments around here. We only have 140 people total, I think, and that includes day workers. Everybody, legit, everybody on every shift. And one thing I learned, and I've seen it, is if you're a really good person, everybody knows that. If you are and I'm just going to say it, if you are a shitbag firefighter in a small department, let me tell you something. Everybody knows you're a shitbag before you've even met them. Because it just travels. I see it. I see it happen. So Annapolis is, we have 3.5 stations. We have three stations. We have 35, which is where I work at. We have Eastport. We have Taylor Avenue. And then there is a county-owned firehouse because Annapolis City and Anne Arundel County are separate departments. But there is a county-owned firehouse where we have a city medic unit at and the EMS duty supervisors at. So that's why I say 3.5.
So just You have any trucks or just three engines?
No, two trucks.
Two trucks.
Three truck, or I'm sorry, three engines, two trucks, a squad, and four or five medic units, five medic units, I guess.
Okay. So I'm assuming you guys do train, you do your own transport.
Yes, do our own transports. We do a lot of marine stuff also, so we have a fireboat. There's also another like a Zodiac at one of the other firehouses for, floods and inland water rescues.
Okay. Is a paramedic required to be hired, or can you get on with BLS and stay BLS?
Now you say I'm BLS. I've never been a paramedic, so I'm yeah.
Okay. And is paramedic required for promotion or no?
No.
No. Okay. All right. And roughly your run total doesn't have to be exact.
Your buddy, my officer, Lieutenant Matthew Lund, could tell you to the T. I'll be honest with you, I don't know. I could probably look at my phone while I'm talking to you. I think I don't even know what we average. Some days we average a dozen calls, sometimes more, sometimes less. I don't know if you want me to look it up, I can.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I do have a question though, because I think a lot of people can relate, so, or should be able to relate, because you went from small to big city to small. Is it the same calls just on a, because I always tell people, like, for us, our biggest department in North Carolina is the city of Charlotte. Same calls, just on a grander scale, but also the same bullshit too.
Yeah, oh, yes, it's the exact same thing. Annapolis is DC. It's just not as big. Same calls I go on in DC that I was going on in DC, I'm doing in Annapolis. I have friends that are firefighters all across the country. Guess what? They're doing the same thing. It's everywhere. And just like you said a little bit ago, firefighters will do anything. We will. The politicians will try to take away your staffing, but ask us to do more. We'll do it. I tell guys all the time, like I can remember in the 90s as a teenage firefighter, lift assists. I'd never went to lift assists, picking people up off the ground. But then I went to DC, we're picking everybody up off the ground. I come to Annapolis, we're picking everybody up off the ground. I talk to people across the country, same thing. I just think at some point in time, somebody must have put a billboard up nationwide that I didn't see that said, if you have a problem, call 911. Any problem, call 911. Call the fire department. And that's what they do now. That's fine. That's fine. I don't care. We rescued a cat out of a tree the other day with a pike pole, but we got it out. Yeah, it's the same calls anywhere you go. The volume, it might be different other places, but it's all the same.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. I want people to understand it, because, and granted, there are some people who, when they get in the fire service, they're like, hey, I want to work for the big city, the big department. And then there are some that are content with working with a smaller group. Because I will say, like, I can definitely relate to you that I know mostly everybody's name within my department. So word travels fast. Like you said, if hey, how would you describe such and such? Good fireman, I'd want him on my truck. Him or her. Okay. This person. Shit bag. Don't really care for them. Don't know why they're still here. So, I always tell people, on the back of your coat, you have the department name, the organization that you work for. And then, to me, the biggest thing is your last name that's on the tail. You have to make sure that that last name is squared away. And I don't want to be known as a shit bag. And that's what I tell people. I mean, if you do, cool. I mean, I guess you have different priorities in life, but I want people to be like, yeah, I'd love to have this person on my truck. Like, I have no issues with this individual.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You're 100% right.
With that being said, how did the book come about? Like, because, I mean, I'm not going to say you don't seem like a writer, but that's no easy task to have a book done and actually published. And so I'd love to hear how your book came about.
I'm not a writer. I mean, I like writing, but I'm definitely not a writer. I am not an author. This was purely an accident, kind of a joke thing. So, when I was working in DC, There was a arsonist that was going out on a regular basis, lighting people's houses on fire, which is another reason years ago that competitiveness, trying to get into work to get line, was a thing because the arsonist was lighting all of his fires in the middle of the night, early in the morning, like 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. All of his fires were in occupied houses, so they weren't vacant, while people were inside sleeping. This became like a thing like for 2 years, 3 years, and a lot of his fires, they were spread out. There were some in Northern Virginia, there were some in Montgomery County, there was a lot in PG County, but a lot of them were in DC, and a lot of them were kind of focused in the exact, like in this one large area, Northeast and Southeast DC. 30 engines sits on the Northeast, Southeast DC line. So he was lighting a lot of fires in our first due and just outside of our area also. Anyways, 2 or 3 years of trying to catch this guy, they ended up arresting him. And they had had a manhunt for 2 or 3 years. When they finally arrested him, he confessed to doing it for 28 years in DC. They knew of one person that had died. That's one of the reasons they were able to catch him. Well, he ended up admitting to other people that had died in these fires. Again, 28 years, every single one of your fires is in an occupied house in the middle of the night. That's not good. So they arrest him, put him in prison. There were some things that occurred. I had a personal, personally, I wanted to know about this guy and why he did it, just because I've been to some of his fires. When everything was said and done, he was finally sent to prison. None of that stuff was ever released. It's almost like it was quiet, like it was a secret. So I actually started doing some research and found out that the reason the reason none of his motives or anything about his life had been released was because he of a plea deal that he asked for. And part of the plea deal was he wanted a gag order that he would admit to every fire that he could remember, how long he had been doing it, people that had died, so on and so forth. But in return, he wanted a gag order on all the investigators that were a part of the case, and he never wanted his motives released. When I read that, I thought that was extremely strange. So in 2011, so it had been 6 years since he had been arrested. So in 2011, I was 30 years old. I was talking to some firefighters and we were talking about him and can't believe that, his motives had never been released. One of them said, "Why don't you write him a letter in prison and find out why he did it?" And I was like, "You know what? I'm gonna do that." I looked it up and I found out that all these like big Hollywood producers and movie stars had already reached out to him because they were like, "This is a big story. He's the biggest arsonist in the history of this country." So I wrote him a letter and I knew he was never going to write me back. And in my book, the actual letter that I wrote him is in there. It was very, very short. Basically, what I told him was, "I'm a firefighter. I work at 30 Engine." So he knew I was close to him. I write articles for Fire Engineer Magazine. Fire behavior intrigues me. I already knew it intrigued him. "I'd like to know your motives and potentially work on a book." I had no desire to work on a book. I knew he wasn't going to write me back. Well, guess what? I think it was 3 or 4 days later, my phone rings from a restricted number, and I answered it, and it was him at the prison. But because I wasn't on his call list, I could not actually physically talk to him. I just heard his voice, and I heard him say his name, and the call went dead. He ends up writing me a letter, had some forms to fill out so we could actually talk on the phone. It transpired, escalated to the point to where we were writing and talking, communicating for 3 years to get his life story and his motives about what he did. So from 2011 to 2014, we talked. Then it took me about 2 years to find a publisher that I liked, and then, or I'm sorry, 3 years of talking, 2 years of writing the actual book, because I had thousands of letters, I still have them. 2 years of actually writing a book, like taking all this stuff and putting it into what I consider to be a book. Shouldn't it take me 2 years, but I'm not an author. Then it took me 2 years to find a publisher that I liked. So it was like a 7 year process. And then the book was released in 2018.
That's wild. Well, one question I have is, how in the hell did he get your number?
Oh, I put it in the letter.
Oh, okay. I was wondering, but I was like, because I'm like, damn, can they really do that? Just, I mean, because you see sometimes like jail or prison, man, like they have cell phones and TV and all that stuff. So it was just like, okay, but you, all right, so you put your number in there.
Yeah, because I didn't know how any of that worked either. So to write him a letter, I had to look him up online. You can look up any inmate online in this country and find out where they're at, what prison they're at. To write a prisoner, just hopefully nobody is thinking about doing this, is not stupid like I was. But what I did was I found out the only thing you need to write a person a letter in prison is to know their name, what prison they're in, and their inmate number. You can get any of that offline. So I did that, and then I put in the letter because I didn't know how it works if he calls me, writes me. Here's my phone number if you want to give me a call. Well, an inmate in prison, if they have money in their commissary, they can call any number they want. If it's not on their approved list, you're not going to be able to talk to the person, but that phone will ring, which is ended up what happened. My phone rang. I just wasn't able to talk to him because I wasn't on his call list, I guess, how that works.
And so you did everything over the phone. Like, I'm assuming you never went there and like a glass between you two and you talked and got notes and.
No, so back then, when I first started writing him, I was dating my now wife. I didn't have any kids. I'll be honest with you. I was 100% going to go down to visit him in prison. If it's, I guess I sit behind glass. I don't know. I 100% would have done it because there was a point where I was like, I actually have a book. Like, I got some really good information in here. Matter of fact, when I published that book, there's two murders in there that nobody had known about. When I wrote the book, I did an entire chapter on it because he admitted to these two people dying. And I started going back through all the research. And I was like, I don't think anybody knows about this. I think he just admitted two people dying in a fire. So I would have 100% gone to the prison and visited with him, in a different room or however that works. But this was when he was in, I guess, his 50s. So he was still kind of young. They rate you, and so at the time he was in a maximum security prison for the worst of the worst. You can't visit somebody like that. Maybe now you can, but at the time you had to be either like a family member or his attorney. I wasn't able to visit him, so never happened. I would have though.
That's wild, man. So, man, I'm just like that's crazy. On a whim, someone's of course the fireman's gonna go, you should write him, and then be like, okay, sure, yeah, why
That's
not?
actually the way it went was, I bet you won't write him.
I can imagine. It's
That's
fireman.
how it went. I bet you won't write him. There may have been money involved. I honestly don't remember if there was. Somebody was like, I bet you won't write him. And I was like, and I remember where it all happened. I was at Huntingtown Firehouse. I got right on the computer while they were sitting there, figured out how to get a hold, like how to, that's how I found out you need their name, inmate number, and where they're at.
And for those that are wondering, what's the name of the book and where can they find it?
So the name of the book is Thomas Sweat, Sweatt, Inside the Mind of DC's Most Notorious Arsonist. You can buy it through my publisher, Mascot Books. You can get it on Barnes and Noble, but of course the best place is through Amazon. There's a hardback version that you can actually read. There's an audiobook version. There's also an ebook version. So you can do it through Apple Books, audiobooks, Spotify, Apple, or just through Amazon.
Okay. All right. I'm gonna have to check it out.
I'll mail you a copy.
Oh, okay. Well, I was gonna say because I know not a lot of people probably agree with this, but I like audiobooks and I know they say it takes away because reading's fundamental and all that good stuff. There are some things I read, but audiobooks, man, you can listen to it and do anything, like mow the lawn and listen to audiobooks and things like that. So okay, awesome, awesome.
Yeah, when we hang up, if you text me your address, I'll mail you a signed version. You can do the audiobook, but I'll just mail you one also, an actual copy if you want it.
Okay. With that being said, man, also, so during our process, you were married, right?
What's that?
During the process of writing the book and being in contact, were you married?
Yeah, during that, yeah, I ended up getting, so I started writing him in 2011. I got married in 2013.
Did your wife think you were crazy?
Yeah. So she, well, look, I'll tell you this. I think you'll agree with this. I think most firefighters are crazy. If you are a firefighter and you are a normal person, like my neighbors, you are normal. I don't think that's normal. I don't know, call it what it is. So she already knew I was not the most normal person, right? And when we were dating, back then, he would call me every single night at 8 p.m. And we started dating. So this was in the beginning. And I was like, hey, I'm then when we started getting serious and like spending time together at nighttime and finally like, sleeping in the same house and all that stuff, I told her, I was like, look, I'm just giving you a heads up. 8 p.m. every night, I got a dude that called me from prison. She was like, what? I was like, yeah, 8 p.m. on the dot every night. I need to be near my phone. Dude in prison that calls me. She was like, for what? I was like, I'm writing a book on him. He's an arsonist. She was like, get out of here. If you read the book, he's an interesting dude. We only talked for 3 years. I ended up having to put a stop to it. But yeah, she thought that was strange, very strange.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I can see how a normal person would, but I can also see how a firefighter is like, what? Like, it is what it is. So I totally 100% get your notions, man.
I mean, he would call me when I was at work, when I was working in DC, and I put him on speakerphone, so other firefighters would talk to him also. They thought it was normal, but my wife didn't.
Yeah, that's crazy. So currently, right now, you're a firefighter first class on Engine 35. With your bad history with that particular fire chief, is that stopping you, or are you content being where you're at, or do you see yourself moving up the ranks at some point?
So I've passed up the last two lieutenant's exams. I could have taken them. The way it stands right now, I have no desire to promote. I promoted in my, this is the way I feel. When I promoted in DC, I was still very young. Not that there's anything wrong with people that promote young, right? You have to have experience to, when you start moving up in the ranks, I feel like you should be really good at that one job before you move to the next. And I see people that promote very, very early. I did it. I did it in DC. Again, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I don't want anybody to take it the wrong way. But I've also learned a lot. And the reason I promoted in DC was to get off that ambulance. Is that the right reason to promote when you're young? Probably not. I was just getting tired of the ambulance. I'm at a spot right now, and I said it earlier. I had a great crew. I had a great crew when I was 30 engine in DC. When you promote, I think everybody already knows this, but you're not staying there, right? They actually sent me to another shift as far away as they could in DC. That's fine. I ended up loving it. But I wake up every morning. I still love going to work. I'll put my crew up against anybody. That's how good we are. Why would I promote? You know what I mean? Like, I don't have any desire to. I don't need them. I don't, it's not about money. That's another thing. People are promoted because they just want the money. I got an issue with that. Yeah, the money's nice, but that should not be your reason. So, am I going to promote in Annapolis? The way I see it as of now, no. But I also know how the fire department is. They like to shake things up. This great crew that I have, not going to happen forever. Something's going to happen. There's going to be a retirement. They're going to transfer. Somebody's going to get promoted. But right now, I love going to work. I love the people I work with. A promotion does not sound enticing to me. Passed up the last two, so I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing.
And there's nothing
And
wrong with that, right?
absolutely not at all. If you love what you do, why change it?
Agree. I mean, and we could go down so many rabbit holes that you might have some that say, well, you'd be a great company officer. You are limiting yourself to
I have people tell me
whatever.
that.
Okay.
I have people tell me that, but you know what? As the driver, I teach a lot of people stuff, right? The firefighter, I'm teaching the new people, like, and then last shift tomorrow, I'm acting. So I am the officer, you know what I mean? And that firefighter that I have had as my firefighter, which is he's amazing. Kalen Peabody, I'm gonna give him a shout out. Peabody's, been driving. He's the guy that I taught. I'm not going to say I taught him how to drive because he's got a lot of good mentors in his life, but he gets to drive me now, when Lon's off. So I enjoy all that. I still just teach people stuff. You know what I mean? If I'm not teaching people stuff, that's a problem. I don't need to be a lieutenant to do that. You could be a firefighter. I learn stuff from firefighters all the time. I'm 43 years old and I suck at technology, but I learn a lot of stuff.
And
It's
how much longer do you have?
in Annapolis.
Or in the fire service in total, like before you're like, I'm good, I'm gonna hang it up.
I don't know. You're vested in Annapolis at 2 years, or I'm sorry, at 10 years. So I would have to do 2 more years to be vested. My deferred comp has done well enough where I could retire. I'm not going to do it at all. I have 2 small kids. I have a 5-year-old son and a 3.5-year-old son. I can't sit still as it is. So if I do 12 more years, that'll get me to 20 plus all that money in my deferred comp. I'll then have a 17-year-old and a 16-year-old. So maybe then, maybe, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't have an exact date. See how it goes. 12 years is a long time. I could die tomorrow, or I could die 50 years from now. Who knows? I don't know. Right. I
Right.
do want to enjoy retirement one day, but I have fun on my days off.
Do you volunteer anywhere or no? It's just strictly Annapolis.
No, I still volunteer in Calvert. So when I went to that hiatus and I quit, that only lasted, what, a year and a half. So it's been 28 years. I'm not nearly as active as I used to be. Working, wife, kids. I do own a business, teaching business, and I teach for the University of Maryland, MFRI, University of Maryland Firearms Institute. I just don't have the time. I see too many guys that miss out on their kids. And one thing I've said is, yeah, I got to go to work for 24 hours, but when I'm off from work, if I'm teaching or anything like that, I want it to be during the daytime when they're in school and all that, or daycare, because I don't want to miss that stuff. I want them to have a dad in their life.
And that's definitely another very important life lesson, man, because it's to me it's a no-brainer. It's a notion of if you want to be good, then yeah, attend the conferences, the hands-on, the live burns, but all that, especially when you have kids, all that, it's like that the fire service can become that mistress where you kind of lose track of, oh, my actual family, because you want to be good at, and there's nothing wrong with wanting to be good at the job, but you got to balance it out.
Yeah, you got to balance it, especially if you're married and have kids. I did all, I was the fire chief of Huntingtown a long time ago. I was very young. I took a bunch. I mean, I took a lot of classes when I was probably too young to take them, but it benefited me. Fortunately now, and I ruined a lot of relationships. Like I'm married now, but I got a long list of girls that I screwed over and that left me because they were the second priority. Number one was the firehouse. I don't regret none of that. I don't regret it. We didn't have kids. I wasn't married. They're life lessons, you know what I mean? But like I said, when I was working in the federal government, I saw a lot of guys that were very, very unhappy, and it went back to their house. And I don't want my kids to grow up like that. You know what I mean? I want them to know who their father is. So.
Absolutely. Awesome. Awesome message. Awesome message. Jonathan, I really appreciate you coming on, man, and just like dropping straight up knowledge and gems. Like it's okay to want to be good at the job, surrounding yourself with good people, getting out the door quick, all that is very important in the fire service. It's very important for someone's longevity. And I 100% agree with you. If you take promotions because it comes with more money, yes, it should come with more money as you go up in rank and have more responsibilities. But if that's your sole reasoning is, oh, because more money, I got bugles, I don't have to do this anymore. Like, to me, you're in it for the wrong reasons. And if you're a friend of mine and you listen to that and that's why you did it, well, then just know, hey, me and you might not be on the same page. Like, I don't care. To me, it's all about giving forth your best foot forward with the community on getting out the door fast, being aggressive to some. They might not like the fact of your aggressiveness or aggression is a little bit more than they would want, but that's for you to know and for them to find out. As long as you do everything in a controlled manner, what says, hey, the way you drive your apparatus is a little bit much for me. Well, good thing you're not driving it. I am. You know what I mean? Like things like that. Like I appreciate the message that you're spreading out for others to hear, man. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you for having me. Everything you just said, like you want to be on your A game. You know what I mean? Your house is on fire. Who do you want coming? You want some fat, overweight people that don't care if they're the last ones there? Or do you want some people that are going to push it? You know what I mean? Push that envelope a little bit. And I think that we do that. I know I do it. I haven't had my hand smacked yet. And anybody told me not to do that. I'm not trying to kill nobody. I'm not trying to get anybody hurt. I feel like we're safe. But who do you want coming for you, you know?
Definitely, definitely. Like I said, oh, I'm also gonna give a shout out to J-Bo Boogie. I don't know if I can call you that. I don't know if we're that cool, but J-Bo, man, really appreciate the hookup on this. J-Bo, everything I said on my social media post when I went to DC is 100% true. That dude is genuine, man. He cares. He will drop knowledge if you're willing to hear it. I can't thank him enough for making this happen. So J-Bo, man, there's your shout out. Appreciate it. I hope soon it will be sergeant, because that is the next step, right? From technician.
Yeah, from technician to sergeant. I'll say something about Boogie. For anybody that's never met him, if they ever run across him, Boogie's a big guy. He's intimidating. He hasn't lived in Calvert County his whole life. I mean, he's from the streets. He is a big dude. He's intimidating. He's the nicest guy in the world. So if when you see him, if you, first time anybody ever meets him, just walk up behind him and give him a big teddy bear hug. He loves big teddy bear hugs.
And with that, we're gonna end it, man. But Jonathan, I really appreciate you coming on. J-Bo, man, thanks for the hookup, pal. Truly appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you to you both.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.